Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 637. I have the events. I have the Nerdist, what am I calling it? The Nerdist Community Corkboard.
Yep, that was it.
Nerdist Community Corkboard, which, you know, send us your event or thing you want to help promote, as long as you're not a big company and you're just a doer who's out there trying to get some attention and make stuff happen. We're gonna we've opened up the corkboard to you, so we're not just promoting our own stuff selfishly. So here's a couple things that I got at events@nerdist.com. Events@nerdist.com. Nice seeming fellow by the name of Robert Duff says, I have an ebook called Fuck Anxiety. Love the show, longtime fan, occasional commenter. And this is his thing. He's a therapist. He's written a self-help book for people that hate self-help books. It has a lot of, and he, as a quick point out, has a lot of swearing. It's called Hardcore Self-Help Fuck Anxiety.
That really sounds like a book for me.
I'm already on board.
That's perfect.
Yeah, so that's Robert Duff. You can get it on Amazon or go to hardcoreselfhelp.com. Lauren Bach and Bridget Fahey, they're going to be at the Adelaide Fringe. They're going to be performing at the Producer's Bar, The Cranny. That's on Grenfell Street, which means a lot to you if you are in Adelaide. February 28th, March 1st, 3rd through 8th, 10th through 15th. 6 p.m., the show's 50 minutes. And yeah, if you go to Adelaide Fringe site, then you know, go see comedy anyway. Anyway, go to the Adelaide Fringe anyway, and
yeah,
also
fun.
See Bridget and Lauren. Also at VHS Dude on Twitter, it's a guy named Ralph. He's doing a showing of the Zucker Abrams classic Top Secret on Saturday, February 21st at 10 p.m. at the Frida Cinema in Orange County. It's a 300 seat theater, and he's just looking for more people to come out to see Top. Why would you not want to go see Top Secret? You know, I have to say, Couple sketch fests ago in San Francisco at the Castro Theater, we showed Airplane, and then the Zucker Brothers and Jim Abrams and Robert Hayes on the panel. And seeing a movie like that, I mean, it's fun to watch on your own.
But in the theater with other people.
But seeing it in the theater with other people, man. And the jokes hold up and everyone's a hit. And I'm pretty sure
so
they've screened
fun.
Top Secret at Sketchfest too. So go to see at VHS Dude, as he's known on Twitter, screen Top Secret February 21st at 10 p.m. at the Frida Cinema in Orange County.
That's awesome.
This episode is Ari Shaffir. He's promoting his new special, Paid Regular, available now on his site, arishaffir.com. That's A-R-I-S-H-A-F-F-I-R. And his show, This Is Not Happening, on Comedy Central, Thursdays at midnight 30, is I believe how he described
show.
It. Yeah.
Love that show.
Ari's a great comic and a good dude, and he's never been on the podcast before.
No.
And this one took a turn that I did not expect, and it was really fun. Because Ari has a very interesting history that I was actually, I feel like I should have been aware of, but I wasn't. So we go down some interesting different paths this episode of Nerdist Podcast. So I hope you enjoy it. This podcast number 637 with Ari Shaffir.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Section of a conversation as I was walking.
Was it a ghost story?
No. It's just that thing where you just hear a segment of something, and then you go, I would love to know what the context of that was.
What was the segment?
It was a lady talking on the phone outside saying, you know she's a lesbian, you know she's a stud, what's the problem?
and I just wanted to fill in the rest of that narrative.
What'd she do? What did the stud lesbian do?
I don't know. To get that? But it was cool, whatever it was.
I'm putting my money on that was one of the people at Relativity, and they were talking about a catfish.
Oh, you think so?
Because they make catfish here, yeah.
Oh.
Wait, there's a show about catfishing?
Yeah, called Catfish.
Wait, hold on.
Catfish, the TV show.
It's
same
about
guys, same
misleading
guys.
People into thinking yes. You're in love with someone. Wow, what?
Have you not seen this show?
No.
It's one of my favorite programs.
It's on MTV. I've never seen...
How do
I
know you're going to be catfished?
I know the guys who did the movie Catfish.
Yeah, same guys.
They're very nice guys.
Yeah.
But I've not actually seen the MTV version.
Is it... Do they try to catfish people? Or they
catfishers
in action?
What happens is people who think they're being catfished will reach out to the show. And sometimes what happens is people who are catfishing will reach out to the show and go like, listen, I want to come clean. So you just follow those two stories along.
What if it's an actual catfish? If they go...
He's trying to pull a catfish and it's falling in love with you?
You are now watching Matt TV.
You are watching Matt TV. Shot on this lot. It all comes back around.
It was shot on this lot. I saw the Strokes here at Matt TV once.
You did?
Yeah, Bobby invited us.
Oh, my God. Did he take his dick out?
Not that episode, but Drew Barrymore was there, too, when she was dating one of those Strokes guys. And we're like, oh, my God, we're standing next to Drew Barrymore.
Oh, wow. So I'm actually surprised Bobby didn't take his dick out then.
Yeah.
We're talking, of course, about Bobby Lee, who will periodically take his penis out.
He's a known dick taker outer.
I don't even think it's periodically. I feel like it's pretty
obvious. Maybe I should have said who periodically doesn't take his dick out. Is that a little more?
He's been known to have left it in once in a while.
I feel like I've known you for like 15 years.
Probably like since open mic, since Bruco.
Since Bruco.
15 years, yeah.
Yeah, about 15 years. Is that where you started?
Yeah, when I came here to do comedy, and that was one of the first open mics. What a great open mic it was.
Wow, that's amazing. That really was a great... What a great first open mic to have.
Yeah. I mean, there was other shitty ones. The Valley ones were awful. Because
before Bruco, it was at another place.
Gypsy.
It was at the Gypsy Cafe in Westwood.
That's when I started.
Yeah.
Yeah, I met you there, and then it moved over to Bruco.
Moved over to Bruco because the Gypsy Cafe got overrun by... angry Persian teenage gentleman who did not wish to be told to not talk out during the show and got very confrontational
sabotage
with the
comedy.
Open micers.
What do you expect from a place called the Gypsy?
Well, yeah. It wasn't.
I went there once, like to smoke hookahs once.
Oh yeah,
yeah, like later.
Yeah, yeah. There were a lot of almost altercations between the sort of the posturing young Persian teenage
did
gentleman.
Did anything move into Bruco?
I don't know.
No, that's a new
vacant,
place now.
Right?
Or really?
Last I saw it was vacant.
Oh.
I haven't been to Westwood in so long. I honestly don't know.
It's a lot
families
of
families and college kids.
You know, I think when I was in Westwood, I sort of had this feeling like, I'll always come here. I'm glad I don't.
It's so in between. If you're going to go out that way, go to Santa Monica.
if you're going to go that far west, just,
yeah, just keep
go an extra few miles.
Me, guys, I go to West L.A. No further than the Victory Boulevard.
Well,
it.
It's hard. You know, there's only, you know, like West Side comedy is scarce. I know there are some shows on the West Side, but when I was doing open mics, there were definitely maybe three that I could think of. There
you
was
know
O'Brien's.
Why they don't need to laugh over there.
Novel Cafe was the worst one around the corner from O'Brien's. That was awful.
Oh, I never went to that one.
You've missed.
Did you ever
nothing.
Go to the Unurban?
Yeah, the Unurban.
Oh, I've done
with Pam.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Yep.
I like that one actually. Yeah. Yeah.
That was sort of more... Unurban was also... That sort of got some more like performance art stuff, too. It mm-hmm. wasn't yep. just...
Some poets.
Some Yeah. It wasn't just stand-up. It wasn't just
people
stand-up.
People stand-up with visual
But
aids.
That, at least they had a supportive owner who just liked there being comedy there.
And yeah. and a lot of places, they tolerate it. Right. Until, yeah.
They've been
until
Bruco,
something happens.
I feel like towards the end there, Bruco, they didn't even know what was going on upstairs. People just walk through and go upstairs.
Yeah, no bartenders ever.
It was a three-story bar, and there were two little performance spaces. There was one nicer performance space with an actual stage, and then the room that we did the open mic in all the time was basically just like a small conference room. I don't know what else to...
Yeah, yeah. It was a conference room. When the Gypsy lost me... was when they started saying you have to buy something. And half of us were so poor that it was like,
well,
oh,
that's
man.
The thing is that a lot of these places will allow an open mic because they think, oh, well, a lot of people will be here. And then they'll realize like, none of these people are going to buy anything. Most of these people are going to bring their own stuff.
They're living on a couch.
They're just there to go up for three to five minutes.
I remember once when I was running the open mic at Meltdown, we did like a Toys for Tots thing, and like if you brought a toy, you'd get a guaranteed spot.
Yeah.
And two people
brought toys.
And it was like, wow.
Come on, guys.
Please.
I gave them 5 minutes.
Just
each.
A little bit of a...
Instead of three?
Yeah.
You're like, you know what?
Like, listen.
But yeah, so I feel like the guy, the group that I associated you, the guys that I thought that I saw you, I assumed that you were running with was you and David Taylor.
Yeah.
And Nick Youssef.
Yeah.
And it was basically guys that would go on to be like the Comedy Store guys.
Yeah.
Like Comedy Store crowd. Is that accurate?
Yeah, we were Comedy Store guys. We didn't know what we were doing, so we felt like fighting was the best way to get to make a way for ourselves. Let's shit on some people here or something. yeah.
I remember there was one show, and the audience, I don't think it was at Bruco. I don't remember where it was. But the audience was not cooperating with the show. And David Taylor
would light people up.
He said something like, you guys don't even understand, but what I'm picturing right now is all of your blood bathing the back of the room. Like he got real.
He didn't want to go like a little bit. Like, let me see a give and take. for overboard.
It was just zero to I wish you were dead.
I hope you all die in a car accident on the way home.
The Comedy Store.
You never really hung out there, huh?
No. I hung out there a few times in the old days, you know, like pre-sobriety.
Gary Shandling days.
Saget would go up there, and so I would kind of follow him around.
Yeah. Like
we'd get drunk and go perform at the Laugh Factory or the Comedy Store, and so they would let me up because I was hanging out with him. And the Comedy Store, I mean, my first couple sets when I really started doing stand-up were in the Belly Room.
Right.
But there was something about the Comedy Store that the environment back then, I don't know, it kind of bummed me out. Like, I was always a little disappointed that I didn't stick it out there because... You know, I think it was one, and I know that stores come back.
It's like, come back
it's fertile ground now.
Mm-hmm.
But for a period of time, it was kind of a depressing place. But when I look back, I go, fuck though. But people who could survive in that environment
came out stronger.
Came out strong.
I've been here 8 years and I've never set foot in the comedy.
Really?
Yeah.
A lot of the biggest problem with it was people said is misogynist, but I always felt like it was just unwelcoming.
Oh, and I women think the are used to being welcome. Parking.
Oh yeah.
You know, parking scared me away a lot too. And I know people are going to be like, "That's a dumb reason," but it's one of the busiest parts of Sunset Strip.
I see Nick at the fucking Improv.
Yeah. Why would I deal with Sunset? What's
parking
the point?
Is like $20 all around there.
Yeah.
And also far. Like it's not right next to the. So it always seemed like. Yeah, by the time I go there
bucks.
And park, and then
you know. Plus, we're talking about not being able to buy food or an open mic.
Yeah,
you're gonna buy $20 for parking to go maybe get a spot at the store.
But now that I have money and Uber, like, what? It's done. Like,
that's why you're there all the time. I remember being in the cupboard with you. Walked up, and I was like, "Where do I know you from?" And he was like, "You told me where." And I was like, "Oh," and you were like, "I'm way fatter now." And I was like,
"Did I say that?"
Something like that.
That's really funny. Slowly becoming self-aware.
You were drinking a lot.
Those days. Oh, my God. But the Comedy Store, it really, like, the thing that I kind of love about it, and I don't know if it's changed, but, like, the bathrooms had, like, mirrors and black toilets, like, mirrored. Everything was mirrored in black toilets.
It's the same.
And it just, it really felt like, oh, this is what it was. It's not changed
since the
golden age of comedy. Like, so many drugs were done in this building.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In the last 30, 35 years.
There was also all these, like, mirror top things for no reason. Like a mirror top piano in the back.
No, for cutting cocaine. That's what it was there for.
Well, there's all these lines in all of them. There's all these slits.
These slash marks.
So many scratches.
Those now, it's kind of funny to think that those should be donated to a museum. Like, Sam Kinison did cocaine here.
The Museum of Cocaine. In Phoenix, Arizona.
God, if there was a comedy museum,
presented by the Escobar family,
it would be a fucking bummer. Like, the comedy museum would be a real bummer.
It would be.
There's a Dangerfield exhibit right now at the Grammy Museum I just saw.
Really?
Yeah.
We're talking about Ronnie Dangerfield?
Yeah, Dangerfield, yeah.
Why at the Grammy Museum?
They got one of his suits there with a red tie and like a bunch of articles and like footage of him.
Really?
I assume he won Grammys for spoken word albums.
Spoken word.
Or comedy.
Oh, that's rad.
Otherwise, why would that be there? But yeah, it's there right now.
Remember when the Museum of Radio and Television came out? Everyone's like, this is amazing. We'll never not need this. And then 3 years later, the internet came. Useless.
Everyone has a Museum of Television Radio in their pocket at all times.
We
called
can access
YouTube.
Anything.
That's such a bummer. No, guys, I want to go in and find some old Merv Griffin shows on microfiche or whatever.
Yeah,
you really would. You could go in and, you know, and even then people would have to donate libraries of things
to
the
be able
museum.
To get it.
So it's not like they even had access to everything.
I went a couple times. It was cool watching
old
specials.
It was a cool place. It was a really cool place.
Never been there either.
So
parking.
When
parking. Yeah, that place. Forget it. Beverly Hills.
How did you guys get into the Comedy Store? Were you working the door there?
Yeah. I had never heard of it. I mean, it's been my home for 15 years. I had never heard of it. I was looking for the Laugh Factory, which they used to have a show on Saturday nights.
Yeah.
Live from the Laugh Factory Live or something like that. So I figured I should get a job in comedy and then work my way in. I didn't know how to do comedy.
Where did you come from?
Maryland. I graduated University of Maryland. And then I drove out and I passed a Comedy Store. I was like, oh, I'll go apply to that place on the way back.
Oh, wow.
And then I just never left. Yeah. So I got a job on the phones, answering phones. Duncan Trussell trained me. On the phones. Yeah, he'd started like a month before. And then worked the cover booth and then the door and everything. I waited a little bit when the waitresses didn't show up on time. I was a manager a couple times, assistant talent coordinator.
Wow.
Built a website, got fired off the website. Worked 2 weeks on the website, rebuilding it. They had lineups from 6 years before. It's fine. None of these people are even here anymore. I put a link in. Like a little, like the size of this cap of directions. Just showed a little car. It's directions. What is that? Well, people can click on here and so they can find out how to get here from the 101 or the 405 or the 10. People know where it is. Well, Mitzi, I work the phones and people call all the time for direct. Where are you from? Here or somewhere else? Somewhere else. Well, then you don't know. People know where it is. It doesn't take up any space. It's just a link. You don't have to click on it and read through if you don't need directions. Take it down. You're fired.
It's not.
It doesn't exist.
It's like someone arguing like, there's no room for another sofa in here. Okay, we don't have livable space. It's literally digital space where there's
just a picture, a photo of a sofa. If it's put in a book somewhere, that's all. It doesn't take up.
I think she was like paying by the word or something.
Yeah,
she made you take down directions.
So helpful. Like, that's one thing you would need. Who built a site before that didn't have directions to the place?
Was this when the Comedy Store was in a downturn?
It was in a downturn.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, there you
go. Yeah. She had just stopped coming around as much, so the people she passed on a whim were like awful, but like she never resaw them to be like, what are you doing here?
Right.
So it was just like, and then Dice and Eddie Griffin just ran the place.
Really?
They would go up for like, they would race to get there first to see who got to bump the entire lineup off.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. So then the door guys, we were fine. By 12:45, 1 o'clock, they'd get off and they'd leave the scraps, and we were like, cool, scraps are amazing. I would love those.
Who's coming? Who's attending these shows at this time?
Audience members, you mean?
Yeah.
Wasn't that full? I mean, Tuesdays we wouldn't even start till like an hour and a half late. We didn't have enough people.
Oh, wow.
It's great now, though. I mean, I don't know if you've seen it, especially, well, you're partially responsible for it, the rebirth of comedy.
How is that possible?
Talk about comedy to a large audience.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
That's what it is. You tell a story about some time you were at a club and something happened. People are like, oh, that seems cool.
Yeah, because I always, you know, in Los Angeles, a lot of times I always think like, who's just going to go out to see comedy on a Tuesday night? But there's a million things for people. Why would they go see? I mean, and I say this as a comedian, understanding why people should go to comedy shows.
We devalue it.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
We do. I mean, I guess there are, if you lived in a small town and there wasn't much to do and it's like, oh, well, there's a comedy club. Let's go see what's going on. But I was thinking like in L.A.,
on a Tuesday, though, even a comedy, that's
but
a once
yeah,
every 2 years
literally
thing.
Literally think about the Sunset Strip in your head and think about the things to do there. It is the Wood Ranch.
The Saddle Ranch.
Saddle Ranch. Whatever
Saddle Ranch.
Wood Ranch at the Grove. Saddle Ranch, you might want to go.
Rock Club's down the street.
Yeah.
Further down, maybe.
You know, walk into the Hustler store for a laugh.
The Viper Room.
It's like there's nothing to do.
Book Soup, huh? Book Soup.
Book Soup's great.
Maybe
you're right.
Book
Soup.
I lived right there. Right next to Pink Dot.
Oh, you did?
For like 10 years.
Oh, boy, when I was drinking, Pink Dot was
really
amazing.
Oh, because they deliver.
Yeah, they would just make a sandwich and bring it to you. You didn't have to leave.
What? I can't even imagine this you.
Isn't that crazy?
You yeah. thought that one of the best jokes I remember about drinking.
What was it?
Here's what I learned this weekend. It's never okay to spill beer on a baby.
Well, that's a good joke.
From a
no,
wedding.
It's not. I don't remember whose baby I spilled the beer.
It was somebody's wedding you went to.
I did spill beer.
Did you really? That wasn't like a, yeah. a thought joke.
Now I gotta. No, it's true. Now I gotta. Now I feel like I could track that baby down and be like,
"Listen,
hey,
there's a step I haven't completed with you. Yeah.
That
baby, you don't remember this?
That baby might be like 13 now. Like that baby would be a teenager.
Yeah, probably.
Probably wow. still has a stain like on its head from where yeah. I burned it.
Sam Martin. Yeah.
That's what happened to Gorbachev. Someone spilled red wine on him. He was a
spilled beer baby.
Yeah,
Gorbachev. Oh my God, I completely forgot about that. I wonder how many dumb throwaway jokes just in the course of sets that we've done
went into the ether
that
were great.
You say it once, you forget, and no one reminds you, and then like you I bet
gone.
How much A-list stuff do you think you've lost?
I think of all of comedians, I think 70% is lost forever.
Wow, that's a really interesting statistic. I would say like 30, but you think it's that high?
But I'm including like, oh, that's a good bit. I got to remember that.
Yeah.
Getting back to it.
That's so hard
not
to
writing
remember
it down.
Bits.
That stuff yeah. goes away.
Why is it so hard to remember bits? And why do I every time fall for it? Well, I go, I know I always forget, but I'm not going to forget this one. 5 minutes later, a dog barks, and I'm like, what?
What?
Wait,
that's crazy. What he's doing?
Where did you go? Where?
And yeah, you had the thought, I knew something important was there.
Yeah.
And you try to do 8 minutes on dog barking, and it's like...
Nothing.
I've committed to it now. I walk around with little Moleskines in my pocket, but if I'm like, I don't feel like getting it out if I'm in a conversation, I just, in my head I go, just so you know, you're just saying goodbye to it. So it's okay, but it's gone.
Be comfortable with that.
Yeah, don't assume you'll remember.
I switched to Evernote. I'm all on Evernote now because it syncs across all the devices.
I use that for a while, but then I get on a plane, and even when I get the Pro, it's like, why can't I access the note?
There's one feature that Evernote doesn't have that's very puzzling to me, which is you can only, in a notebook, you can only arrange notes in order from the date it was modified or alphabetically. So I can't, if I wanted to arrange my set,
yeah.
I can't make a bunch of notes and then arrange the notes however I want within a notebook, which seems to me a very basic function.
Yeah, they're close.
They're
you
so
should,
close.
You should consult for them.
I should, Evernote.
You should consult for a lot of things.
I should a lot of things. Give me money.
No, I like the Evernote. Some things you shouldn't consult for, like sports.
Sports I should right. not consult for.
You have different balls in this thing.
This ball is too, it's too weird shaped.
That's just strange.
That's bizarre. Yeah,
how right. do you even throw that?
Thanks for your help.
What's wrong with square balls? Square balls are fun because you never know which kind they're going to bounce. This one's predictable. Round always goes exactly where you think it's going to go.
Yeah.
I just want to put directions on the homepage. You're fired.
over what?
Putting directions on the homepage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus, I cried after she fired me.
She really, like, that was, you were fired.
Yeah, she was, but she, I mean, I could still work in the door and stuff. Just not from the website. I gave like 80 hours to a week for 2 weeks.
Did you get paid at least?
Yeah.
Okay.
$500 a week.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah, and I got to, yeah. I had a bunch of good jobs there. The what? Best job there was they had a video room with hi-8s and old tapes. It was my job to watch the tapes, log them in. They were just unmarked. So old Jim Carrey sets, all these
holy
crazy old
shit.
Yeah, treasure. But I also had to stand right by the old hi-8 player because they wouldn't repair it and it would just eat these things. So anytime I heard, I just stop it and like pull it out with a screwdriver and get it all out and And I was like, you know, it costs $75 just to get a new player. They're like, nah.
You're fired. God yeah. damn it. I'm trying to help this place.
Yeah.
What were you doing with all the hi-8 footage?
Just saying what's on there. And then when E did a True Hollywood Story in the Comedy Store, that's right when I was working. And I was like, I just got them the footage they needed.
Did you save any of it?
No.
Fuck.
Wow.
There must be epic.
I was going to digitize everything. That was going to be the plan.
Because you know what?
There must be a lot of that sitting at the E library.
You know what you're thinking? You know what Probably. You think about? You only tend to think of other people like the comics that we all love.
Yeah.
You only tend to think of them in terms of the special that they had or a set where you saw them.
Yeah, but their first set, they're working it out kind of things. Those are interesting.
Just them as human beings like wading their way through night after night, set after set.
Oh, right.
That's
like, fuck, how long is he going to do?
Yeah.
I'm going to go on. And you're like, you don't picture Sam Kinison saying that or Jim
no.
Carrey or
wow.
Robin Williams or Pryor.
Were you at the store one day? I feel like this was you that told me a story about Doug Stanhope and someone threw a chair at him on stage or something at the Comedy Store.
No.
Or he threw a chair at someone.
I didn't see that. I've seen chairs being thrown at people.
Really?
Yeah.
What does it take to get a chair thrown at you on stage?
Late night, booze.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The combination of those two things.
I guess when it happens, you probably kind of go, I'm surprised this doesn't happen more often, actually.
Taylor's such a... I get lumped in with him. I'm not as mean. My comedy's not as mean. But, like, he would say, like, no, the base of the mic stand is really good. If you pick it up, you can jab it at people. It's a really good weapon.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but just the fact that he was thinking that way.
He needed a weapon.
Just that he was thinking in those terms where it's like, these aren't mean streets, man. This is your attic business, Sunset Strip. You don't have to think in terms of self-defense.
Unless an anomaly occurs, you're usually not going to have to protect yourself on stage.
Yeah.
When did you... Because I think we all kind of go through the punk phase where we just are trying to shock people.
Yeah.
Just to get some reaction.
Some reaction.
It's sort of like what a misbehaving child does. Like, I think most comics
brattiness.
Have that period in their set where they're like, I'm just going to... Just to get something, you know, like they'd rather rattle the audience or gross them out rather than, you know, like if the joke isn't working.
Also, we were bad, so we could easily fall back and like just edgy, too edgy for you.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you're an awful writer and a performer.
Okay, I guess I'm too smart for the room. No, not a great joke.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
You're too smart. Why is that the reason of your failure? That's such a leap. They all went to college in the audience.
No, just too
bookstore.
Smart. Yeah, I don't know. Just too smart for the audience.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know. It is. Those meltdowns are always the most fun.
Yeah. God. Yeah, I don't know when I stopped trying to do that. I just started trying to get better, I guess. I don't know. It wasn't like a decision. I wasn't always trying to shock people, though. But I'm still on that side. Well, you know.
Yeah.
I've done at midnight.
Yeah.
I like, you know, jokes that make people go, oh.
Come on. What are you doing?
I don't know. I'm a little darker, I guess.
How dark was the special?
Not as much. I mean, I'm still lumped in as a dirty comic, but I had like one sex bit in there in 72 minutes. Special. I mean, there's some anti like U.S. government stuff. Things like that, I guess, would be like darker or more like subversive. More subversive. Let's say that.
Okay.
I don't know.
So the NSA put you on a dirty list just to keep you down?
I think it's just from when I started, people knew me as like a filthy comic. Because I was so religious that I was like, every time I had sex, it was such a shock for me.
You were super religious?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, until after college. In college. I went to yeshiva for 2 years in Israel.
Uh-huh.
Lived there. Studied like rabbinical school.
Oh, you're Jewish? I'm kidding. Come on. Come
Fuck
on, guys.
You, Hardwick.
Ari Shaffir.
The Jew. My people were not allowed in your dad's bowling alleys.
They could go there. They just wouldn't want to.
Exactly.
I mean, in those days.
Where was it? Nashville?
No, it was in Memphis.
Oh.
In Memphis.
Memphis is more redneck than Nashville, right?
Because
there's no music influence?
There is. Well, Nashville has a huge... Nashville's actually more musical than Memphis. Memphis has a crazy music scene, but Nashville is like, that's where a lot of the country record labels are. So they have different, that's where they're grant, you know, like that there's different music heritage there. I think Memphis's musical heritage is dirtier.
Yeah.
It's a good town. And there were a lot of Jewish folks when I was growing up in Memphis. It wasn't just,
really?
It wasn't just like white people and rednecks. Hmm. There were
really,
yeah. So yeshiva is that like a personal sabbatical?
No, I guess it was just like my parents were Orthodox. Everybody in my first school like did that into yeshiva for a year after high school. Studied from like as soon as you woke up. Studied for like 30 minutes before morning services.
What are you studying?
Talmud, Torah, the prophets, all of it, all the Jewish stuff.
To then just is the goal to know it as much as possible?
To know it. So you can be a pious Jew and you can be a learned and member of and functioning member of Judaism.
And then what happens?
And then you do it all and then you still go to hell anyway because everyone goes to hell for 11 months. It's just going to be easier on you if you live better.
So you can answer more of the questions that hell throws at you like, aha, but then this happened.
I think the better you the better you are, the lower they turn the flame up.
Oh, okay. But there's flame no matter what.
They got to cleanse your soul.
At what point?
Their soul has to be cleansed to get to heaven.
At what point did you go, maybe some of this isn't some stuff I believe in?
You want to hear about it?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm in a dorm room in yeshiva.
Mm-hmm.
My year two, I think. Nope, first year. And they had these light fixtures above the beds that you could read by, preferably reading Talmud.
Sure.
But whatever you wanted to read. And you can't operate lights on the Sabbath. Friday night sundown to Saturday sundown. No electricity. You've heard of that.
Yes.
Okay. So this light, I was going to take this book, I was going to read by it and take this cup and put it on top of this. It was just like this round light fixture and put it on top and drown out the light so I could sleep. But the cup kept sliding off because it was round. And I started thinking like, maybe I'll just turn the light off. I can't sleep. The light's right in my eye. Like, I should just turn it off. But my window is right by the entrance to the whole dorm. So I was like, somebody's going to see me. I'm going to get caught. So I didn't do it. But then for the next 2 years, I kept thinking like, well, what was that doubt about? If God didn't want me to turn the lights on and off, what's the doubt? What's the, I'll just turn it off. And it shouldn't matter if a friend sees me. If a friend saw that I just, if you see me stealing, it's not nearly as bad as if God sees me stealing.
Right.
And then it was like, well, what's that doubt about? And I started thinking like, well, I'll compare it to, it was like, I believe in my father. I believe he exists.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to masturbate in front of my dad because I'm like, he's a real person that's going to be like, what are you doing?
Right.
But I'll do it in front of God.
On the Sabbath?
Yeah. But I'll do it in front of God because I don't fully believe in that.
That's really interesting. That it was almost that the analysis of it kind of turned on itself.
Yeah. And then I started thinking like, well, if I don't believe, maybe I just don't believe. Maybe I'm just doing this stuff on autopilot since I was little. And I realized that I just no belief in me. I mean, I don't know. I know you're a 12-stepper. I don't know what you are.
I was Catholic. I was.
So do you still believe in that stuff? I just did. I never looked inwards. I just didn't have it in me. There was just no faith.
No, I don't believe in the Catholic school stuff anymore.
Okay.
I mean, it is one of those things, and I remember being in high school and really believing in it. And
yeah.
Arguing with people who were like, and
arguing with them. You're an idiot.
And arguing with people who... And using those standard arguments where people would go, well, you know, the planet's just sort of a cosmic accident. No, think of a tree. It's so complex.
Yeah.
And how could you? Someone had to.
Yeah, someone had to. Voltaire has a quote.
Yeah.
The world embarrasses me and I can't believe there's a watch with no watchmaker.
Right.
But the problem is watchmakers have... They make watches. People are like, oh, how do you explain how the world works? I'm like, how do you explain how the telephone works? It wasn't God. Just because I can't explain it doesn't mean it was God. There's a lot of science involved.
By the way, I still don't besmirch anyone who says how else could a tree exist. I mean, like, I have friends who are religious and it doesn't, you know, I don't understand that that's...
No, it's bad reasoning. I disagree. In any argument, well, how else could it be is bad reasoning. You haven't proven something. You've just disproven other things that you know about.
So you think it's more of a an easy answer to go, oh, well, God did that.
Well, there is no proof for God. That's the joy of God. It's always a leap of faith.
Sure.
So if you have any proof for it, if there's any like, well, in the Himalayas, you can see this thing that's clearly God. Well, why would he make himself evident there and not to the rest of the people?
Well, that's usually when people go, well, you're not meant to understand his ways. I'm like, well, that seems fairly convenient.
Yeah, that's an easy cop out.
But, you know, again, I still think people should believe whatever comforts them.
Believe whatever you want, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else.
Believe whatever you want in the privacy of your own home.
Yeah.
Don't bring it into public discourse.
And don't jerk off on the Sabbath. Are you allowed to jerk off on the Sabbath?
You're allowed to jerk off whenever.
Okay.
They forgot to write that down.
Jerking off, actually, is a bigger sin than having sex with a non-Jew without a condom.
Are you serious?
Yeah, you're wasting seed.
Oh, yeah. Well, because yes.
If a sperm is wasted, God goes quite irate.
Because in the early days of in the early days where tribes were vying for dominance of regions, yeah, if you were meant to populate as much as possible.
Don't waste seed.
So of course it would benefit a tribal leader to say like, if you're not populating and you're wasting seed, then you are committing a crime against this tribe by not growing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Remember in Battlestar Galactica where they said no more abortions?
Yep.
Early on, they had to like redo laws and like, hold on. Abortion was cool when we had plenty of people. But
abortion was cool.
Abortion was so cool.
It was so cool. I mean, I was doing it before it was cool as an abortion hipster.
But, I was an abortion hipster. That's hilarious.
But yeah, we used to do them with these like cool brass. So you remember pre losing your faith, losing your religion,
and then losing
and
it.
Post.
I was in Yeshiva University. I come back to America. Was in YU, which is like a split curriculum college.
Which sounds like YU.
And then I just stopped it all right.
How was your family with that?
Not great.
No.
No.
How do you even tell them?
I had to tell them I didn't want to go to Yeshiva University anymore. It was a waste of money. And it was like, why am I taking all these courses? I don't believe in anymore. I've been eating Taco Bell. Tell me what you think. So that was one of the first, because it was right there near YU.
Yeah.
So it was a Taco Bell. So it was one of the first places I stopped keeping kosher. And it made me nauseous, made me sick. And I threw up a couple times.
Yeah.
Is that because of guilt or Taco Bell?
You know, I maybe a little column A, a little column B.
Yeah, okay. Okay. I just don't know.
Well, also, if you had been eating a specific diet up to that point.
Oh, and then.
And you're introducing a bunch of new chemicals into your system.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine. Because how old are you at that point? Like 16, 17?
No, I was 20.
You were 20.
Yeah.
God, wow, that's amazing. Like, you made it that far down the line. Mm-hmm. What was it like in Israel?
Israel was amazing. I mean, you've never been there. The whole country is pretty much made of stone.
Yeah.
The big cities like Tel Aviv is a giant metropolis that I didn't really get to experience because I was so religious. I mean, there's like nightclubs and fun, non-religious shit you can do there. But I mean, I was all Jerusalem. And that's just beautiful up in the mountains. It would snow. God, it was so great. And everyone was Jewish. So there was no problem of finding kosher food.
Sure.
You had to go out of your way kind of not to eat kosher.
Yeah.
And then like you would dance on like the day that the Torah was given to the Jews. You would dance all the way from Yeshiva all the way to the Western Wall with like 75 guys singing and praising God. It was awesome, man. It was my first time I succeeded in like a school atmosphere. I was always the worst student. But then when I got there, all I had to do was sit and study. There's no tests.
Did you ever think about going back and starting an open mic in Jerusalem? That would not work.
I wanted to go there. Rhodes always talks about going there. Wanted to do a gig there.
Tom Rhodes?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But I'm like, then I got to see all my relatives. there's no way I can go there and
could
not
you do
see
a
them.
Set in Hebrew?
No. No. Not anymore. I could have then, probably. Except the comedy part.
Except for the comedy part, yeah.
But my language has gone way down.
I mean, to see how far to the other side of the spectrum.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, and
guys like me and Pete Holmes and Kurt Metzger. Like, we're the ones I know that were, like, raised religious.
Right.
And we've sort of rebelled against it. So that's what I was going to say. I'm dirty. I was dirty because, like, sex was like, I can't believe this!
So when did you lose your virginity?
23. Yeah. So it was, like, the biggest thing on my mind.
Did you throw up like Taco Bell?
I threw up in a way. But it wasn't like Taco Bell.
Did you feel guilty at all? Or were you like, oh, yes, this is what I should be doing?
No, by then it was normal. First girlfriend, Kate Hicks. We loved each other. We both lost our virginity to each other. There was no guilt on that. Not by then. But telling my parents. My mom was upset because I was going to lose like the like tradition and the sense of like community. My dad was like, you're lower than a dog.
Really?
That's what he said. He goes, even a dog believes in God.
Do they though?
I don't know. I didn't feel like I was in a position to check him on.
The Pope said dogs go to heaven.
Scout, God or no God? Yeah. Oh, agnostic.
Silent. Yeah. So, did you ever repair this with your dad?
Yeah, after a few years, he got to like. I think he saw some. Okay, so my aunt had married into a family, and her stepkids, one of them married a non-Jew, and the dad was just like, "You're done. We're it's over." He started saying that. I think he started saying the prayer for the dead.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It was bad. So my dad saw that. Like, they kind of tear apart a family. And then he also started having grandkids. So then it was like, all right, so one won't.
Right.
Who gives a shit?
Where do you think people... Because I think a lot of times, you know, not just with religion, but with lots of things.
Yeah.
When there are contradictory rules.
Yeah.
It doesn't always make people go, oh, maybe this system is flawed because this... And this can't possibly coexist. Yeah. They just somehow rationalize
military people never go, I was sent to Iraq on a false mission. to, you know, just because there was no weapons of mass destruction. Clearly they lied about it. I was, but they have to be like, no, I'm defending your freedom. And it's like, no, that's what you signed up to do. But somebody gave you bad orders and you're defending something else.
So you think it's, you think, what, can you think of stuff in your head that you were, that you knew was contradictory that you still were like, no, but I guess this, because what I'm getting at is how a parent can go, you're dead to me,
yeah,
knowing that your offspring is, you know, supposed to be this, this entity.
Treasure
you,
thing. Yeah. My dad didn't quite get like that. He saw that it could be a problem and could be a, like a reality. So he like went against it. But no, I don't know. The only thing I saw, not from religion, but somebody told me not to leave a CD on pause because it'll scratch up the CD. And I believed that for like 10 years. And somebody's like, how would it scratch a CD?
The laser would just burn right
like,
through.
Yeah, it spins. I'm like, yeah, it just spins, man. Same rate as when it's playing or not playing.
Hey, man, it's just going to spin.
And I was like, no, but the scratches.
There is no God. And yeah, then immediately that's where your faith starts to crumble.
Yeah. No, there weren't that many contradictory things. There's always an answer for it. I was trying to think. There was one thing I remember discovering in Israel, having a real tough time with it, and then having to like figure out what the answer was. Oh, advising my non-religious friends to stop fucking non-Jews.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because if you tell somebody they're sinning and make them understand it, then the sin kind of counts. If I give you a kosher hamburger, but it's really not kosher, you haven't done anything wrong. You
right.
didn't know.
I didn't
fault.
Know.
You're scot-free. But if I tell you it is not kosher and you eat it anyway, then it's on you.
So it really is about intention and willfulness.
Yeah. So if I tell them that it's bad for you to be hooking up with non-Jews, you should be like dating Jewish girls.
Right.
If they then continue to do it.
They're not sinning. So their ignorance is bliss equals not sinning,
yeah,
technically.
Yeah.
Because no one ever told them.
Yeah.
And you didn't want your friends. You didn't want to have a boner buzz kill. So you were like, I'm just not going to
tell.
I had
big rabbis tell me, like, you got to go higher up. I can't give an answer on that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's pretty fun.
How do you think most people justify that stuff?
Justify what stuff?
I mean, like, how do you think they justify around the contradictions?
Hmm.
Did you ever talk about it with any of your friends?
Well, the thing with the Torah is there aren't really contradictions. It's all Talmud. It's all logic-based. So nothing contradicts with each other or it would have come up.
Well, then maybe I'm talking about the Catholic Church, because there were many things that were contradictory.
Like
there,
what?
There are many things that are contradictory. Well, it's just like when you look at the Ten Commandments, there are places, and certainly in the Bible, there are places that contradict. And so it's, you know,
well, it'll be like what people command you to do is
right.
different than what it says in the Bible.
Right. So,
you know,
like,
love your neighbor, and then how do you explain going to that region and just murdering thousands of people?
Well, and also,
you went there; they're not your neighbor,
right?
You come back home; you're fine.
So, yeah. if your parents tell you to do something that's sinful,
yeah,
what do you do? Because you're supposed to honor your parents.
Oh, right.
But then you're not supposed to sin. But if your parents are telling you to do it, you're supposed to honor them.
Oh.
So where do you...
It's exactly how Spock and Kirk got off of that planet with the androids. They tried to out-logic them.
Right.
Anyone? iMud was the name of the episode?
Yeah, but how can you out-logic an android? That's ridiculous writing.
Well, you say, listen very carefully. Everything I say is... Everything Spock says is a lie. And then Spock says to the android, I am lying. And then the android didn't know what to do.
Just blows up.
And smoke started coming out of its ears. It was a good time.
I'm a steam robot.
If you are telling the truth, then you are lying. But if you are lying, then you are not telling the...
Yeah, that's an Old Testament one. If your parents tell you to do something, yeah, you would just go by what the law is and not what your parents
said. That was Mud's women. Mud was the first one.
You could still do it in an honorable way. In fact, I remember studying something like that. I think you have to do it in the nicest way possible. Saying, Mom and Daddy, I appreciate everything you've done for me, but I can't.
So the rules of the rules of the Talmud and the Torah are pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, yeah, and everything has a reason to it. Like that, if you accidentally kill somebody, you got to pay their wife, because you've taken away their income,
right,
for the household, especially back then,
right.
But if you kill a doctor, you owe them a certain amount of money, let's say 100 shekels, and if you kill a garbage man, you owe them like 10 shekels.
Oh wow!
And they're like, "What do you mean? Are you saying life is worth more than other lives?" And so the Talmud is all just analyzing that. And they go, no, it's not that. Every life is equal, but their cost of living has to be met.
So
they're used to a certain way of living.
How many, because, you know, a lot of these rules were created when our culture was a lot different.
Oh, yeah.
When basically...
They don't apply anymore, Hardwick.
When science and religion and politics were all kind of the same thing. Like, yeah. The same people were...
What if you find a piece of meat on the ground and there's three restaurants and two of them are kosher, one is not kosher? Are you allowed to eat that piece of meat?
No one's eating meat off the ground. Why are we still studying that? What are you talking about?
Is that on the Jewish SATs?
Yeah, it really is. That's like a standard thing they gave
us. The JSATs.
The JSATs.
Yeah. You find a piece of meat. You accidentally drop a piece of ham into a vat of soup.
Well,
it's over 60 amma.
Isn't there an old... And, you know, before I get into this, I apologize to any Bible scholars out there who are going to be like, you got it wrong. Yes, I know. It's been forever since I was in high school. But wasn't there a... I actually remember my mom cried when... Because I was taught by Jesuits. And Jesuits were, at least the ones that I was taught by, were liberal in terms of their interpretation of the Bible. And so we were taught, like, it's symbolic. Don't take it literally. It just means, you know, it's supposed to be a series of stories that were told different times and then sort of sewn together. And of course, I told my mom that, and she was like, what am I paying for?
Yeah.
But
they told us, no, they said it's symbolic, but it's also stories really happen.
But it's also really happen. But just the idea of, you know, if your brother dies, you have to then take
marry
up the responsibility of procreating with the wife. It's like, how do... And I'm not asking this in an accusatory way. I'm genuinely curious. The Bible seems to be one of these things that people kind of pick and choose whatever suits them to a degree, you know?
Especially with things like that.
So it's like, well, if you're going to believe... If people who run around quoting the Bible and go, well, the Bible says this, and the Bible says this, and the Bible says this, and the Bible says... I'm just doing a Southern accent because I'm from the South. Why do they not...
Go,
then
the Bible
follow
also
everything.
Says,
like, okay, well, if you're going to say this, then why are you not fucking
your
brother's
garments.
Sister?
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Maybe they're doing it while he's still alive. I don't know. But,
yeah, you're supposed to marry her and give her kids.
And don't pull out. Don't masturbate. Don't, like, why is it the one thing where people just, they're so dogmatic about the things that seem to benefit them, their own belief system the most, but not, they go, oh, well, yeah, well, I mean, I don't need to do all that. And it's like, well, but if you're doing it, then do it 100%.
Yeah. The reason is because people are afraid of change. That's the biggest thing. I talked to Renazisi's parents, and they remember the first cavalcade. What is it when all the popes meet?
I think it's the Pope cavalcade.
Whatever it is.
Pope circus?
Maybe Pope's. Oh, yes. It's
Country Pope
circus.
Jamboree.
Conclave.
Conclave.
Right? In the papal conclave?
The conclave.
When they were little, and they said they remember the whoever led the services, the priests, turning around. He was either facing the audience or he wasn't facing the audience.
Pre-Vatican II.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go, no, now you're going to face the audience. Or vice versa.
Yeah.
And he goes, they remember their parents going, this is ridiculous. Are you kidding me? That's no way to worship.
Yeah, because initially the...
who cares?
Initially the priest was supposed to be essentially the spiritual leader.
So he's facing forward.
He was facing forward because he was essentially the vessel to God.
Right.
And so... After so in Vatican II, it and then also Latin masses in Latin, and then after Vatican II, it became more about the community of the church not just being the home of God, but like people, but the community of people, like church with the capital C was the community that was there. I remember that from I was an altar boy for years.
Why is altar boy a thing?
I mean, it was cool. We got to wear robes.
We got to wear robes
and be
and
on
burn
a stage.
Incense. We got to play with fire, to light candles.
Pretty cool.
We got to drink wine. To
killing it. We were just killing it.
They can't do their own stuff. They need assistance.
Need assistance. You know, I'm busy. I need an assistant.
Right.
Maybe I should hire some altar boys as an assistant.
Maybe you should just hire like high school kids to
just
come to
hire 10-year-old boys.
Yeah.
Here
you
was
also
the worst
got to wear
rule.
Special robes. You got to be up in front of people. Like you really were. You were a
part
helper.
Of the show.
That's right.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. I guess it's just all the abusing the system. It's like, why is it still around anymore?
Well, I guess I just, that one sticking point to me, I would love to sit down and have a conversation with someone who is, you know, who is strictly adherent to the Bible and go, well, how come you don't do everything?
These things, this thing, this thing.
I'm sure there's a reason, and I'm sorry that I don't know it. And you know,
yeah, no, I would like to know the answer to that. Like,
well,
why
people wrote the Bible could not account for how easy it would be to get porn. I think if they knew
they
that,
didn't know
they'd
that
be
then.
Like, well, guys, go for it.
Here's the worst rule. So if a woman gets married, there's a contract. It's called a ketubah, and you have to pay their family a certain amount for them. So if you had a daughter...
Like a dowry?
Yeah, exactly. I'd have to pay you however much.
Right.
Three goats. Let me have your daughter's hand.
Unless she was a garbage worker, then it's one goat.
Exactly. But if she's not a virgin, you pay less.
Sure.
And so
I say that in a sarcastic way, not like I didn't mean that. Like
it came off so easy.
Well, of course. I mean, duh. You know.
So if a woman gets raped, she's no longer a virgin and she's worth less on a dowry system. So one of the punishments for the rapist is he has to then marry the woman. He has to do that for her because she's less valuable. She's less marketable. Jeez. To find a husband with no thought to maybe this woman doesn't want to marry her rapist.
Well, what about thought to like put the guy in jail forever?
Maybe that. What about, okay, well, now what about got forever?
What about kill or put the guy in prison for the rest of his life?
Out of here. Yeah, some of these things just have not been updated.
How about
they need
cut,
an update.
How about cut the rapist's dick off and throw him into the river?
Yeah, maybe that should be a benefit for the woman. She gets to cut his dick off instead of having to marry him.
But there's just no, I mean, what do you think, just from what I can tell, like, you know.
Yeah, nobody rails against that.
Now that Rockstar Pope's in the Vatican, like, people are loving the Rockstar Pope. And he's saying a lot of very cool things.
Maybe he'll get rid
of that
law.
Very open-minded things. And so maybe that's how change starts. Does it come from the religious leaders?
Or he'll be poisoned soon.
No, he's not going to be poisoned.
Listen,
soon.
That's how the Catholic Church works. We poison people.
You just say that because you watch James Bond films and you think that everyone gets poisoned.
No, it's not. I'm just talking about just the history of the Catholic Church and the papacy.
He'll get overrun.
Someone's going to.
No one's going to
come in and go. That was crazy that Benedict stepped down. That never fucking happens.
Yeah, there's some shit going to come out. There's some shit's going to come out about that.
No shit.
100%.
Like, that does not happen. A living pope does not go, eh, you know what, guys?
It doesn't happen.
I'm done being the voice of God on
Earth. We've
had
senile ones. We have completely senile ones. And they're like, no, but this one's, he's done.
Totally cool.
Some shit's going to come out.
Yeah, Pope John Paul II was like a paperweight near the end.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I want to know what's going on with Benedict.
It'll come out when he's dead.
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah. It's got to be something crazy, or he directly covered something up. Yeah.
He directly added to, like, and, he transferred one rapist to another area.
Well, he did do that. That was a thing that happened often.
He was in charge of that?
All under his watch. A lot of that stuff was happening.
Oh, God. Such a corrupt system.
But then, you know, and that's the other thing, too. I was reading today that there was a...
Nobody just steps
Mary,
down.
I forget the last name of her.
Magdalene.
No, it wasn't Mary Magdalene.
Good guess, though.
But she got excommunicated from the church in, like, 1866 for... reporting that the priests were diddling little boys. So she got excommunicated. And then Pope Francis just canonized her, made her a saint.
Oh, nice.
To make up for it?
Yeah. Like, hey, well,
least, cool.
Least he can do.
Well, he seems like a good guy.
Yeah.
But I still don't ever think, oh, I'm going to go back to the... There's nothing wrong with it for me. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with the, you know, going to church and stuff. It just doesn't... I don't know.
My friend Steve Simone goes, he's such a pure, nice guy, so I hate to like shit on him over it, you know?
Right.
So the way he does, there's some Christians that are like, okay, if everyone was like you,
that'd
be an okay religion.
There's good apples in every bunch.
You know, for me, it just, the having
if every Muslim was like Muhammad Ali,
Catholic,
I'd be into it.
Having gone to church up through high school.
Yeah. All through high school, you went to church every week?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wow. I had to, too.
Wow, really?
Well, in Catholic high school, we'd have to go every Wednesday, and then there were Sundays that I would go, too, because my mom was the cantor. Like, she was the song leader in church. So there was some...
What?
There was a period
where I
was going
progressive.
Twice a week. And so, at a certain point, I kind of just felt like... I remember the first time I heard about obsessive-compulsive disorder.
Yeah.
And in my teenage brain going, okay, so performing ritualistic behavior so bad things don't happen... Isn't that what I'm doing every week in like this knit?
So bad things don't happen.
Sit, kneel, stand, kneel, stand, sit. Say this.
That
say
was
this.
Always my big
Not
problem.
Not six rosaries, seven.
I always would say that to my mother. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Why are we sitting, kneeling, standing? What is this? Just get all of it done at once. Do all the sitting first, all the kneeling, all the standing.
You know what I think happens? I think if you pass a certain point in your life, there's a certain threshold that as you get older where you just don't have energy for shit anymore. And if you get to that point and you still are going, like you're still involved in your religion, you go, you know what? I don't know, but I just go.
I'm
and
in it.
Just,
I go every
I'm
Saturday.
Not
going to
change now.
Yeah.
But if you fall out before that, you know,
you're out.
Then you're out.
Yeah. I think
Unless
so.
Something crazy happens and you have like a, I almost died and I had a vision and now I go back and I'm devout and I'm spreading the word.
Yeah.
Did you see that one of those kids that said that he went to heaven when he had that accident, admitted to lying?
God. here's the thing. Yeah, he said, yeah, I was just making it up. Because he got more religious. And he's like, I feel guilty. Before, I didn't feel guilty about the lie, but now I do. And but, all the people who followed him, where are they now?
Yeah.
Did they go, but still, it's still real? What do they do?
I don't know. I mean, I think it would be... I think it would be really great to feel like,
oh, well, there's a, you know, there's a grander purpose,
yes,
and there's this.
Absolutely.
And there's
this, that's the draw.
And you know, it's just hard. It's just hard to think that.
That's the draw. It'd be amazing. We're all here for a reason.
Right.
That sounds amazing. That sounds great.
And I think we're probably just not all here for a reason. That's just my personal opinion. I feel like we're here. We're this sort of accident of nature, you know?
Like, why are we here? It's like, I don't know, why is that rock over there? It just is. It just ended up there.
In a universe of, you know, billions of stars and planetary systems, it's not crazy that...
In the words of four-time Super Bowl winning coach Bill Belichick...
Oh, garbage.
It is what
so
it is.
So excited today.
Garbage.
Did he say that?
Yeah, that's what he always said. It is what it is. It is what it is.
But again, you know, I say these things and I'm not shitting on anyone who has religion in their life. I think that's fine. I don't have a problem. I'm not trying to say I'm better than anyone else. This is just what I have come to believe.
Yeah, the nice thing is though, going to synagogue every Saturday, I'm sure it's the same thing for church on Sunday. It's such a great sense of community, seeing the same people all the time.
Sure,
you know, have seen your parents, friends, and
of course,
how you doing in school?
And Jimmy, he's the insurance guy at the church now.
Yeah,
everyone got
that's
knowing
so
that
beneficial.
Knowing that no matter what happens during the week, you have that thing at that specific time.
Yeah, well, if you have we had Friday night dinners and Saturday lunches with the family every week, or we go to another friend's house, but generally all together, and it's like you can't let a kid get into heroin when you're with him every Friday night.
Yeah,
you can't lose them completely.
Kid's gonna get inherited on Wednesday, maybe Thursday,
I'm just
but Friday.
Saying,
back
as long as he's clean by the weekend, we're gonna keep tabs on him after a while.
Well, you know, my mom is from a big Italian family.
Yeah,
and so
gross
on Sundays.
Italian
on Sundays.
Big just Matthew and Matt.
Family. Yeah. Which one?
All of it.
I don't like big things.
All the above.
Yeah.
All the above. But you know, on Sundays after Mass, you know, there'd be these huge, like the great grandmother would make. You know, and my great aunts would just make all this homemade Italian food. It was very, very communal. I mean, I really, I understand the draw of it, but it's the getting really literal about stuff. Where I'm like, I don't know if it literally, you know, like when people,
just make a family get together. You don't have to add these fables.
And growing up in the South, there's a giant like you're in the that's the Bible Belt. Like there's a, you know, Southern Baptist, there's a giant mega
church. There's 15,000 people churches, right?
And they're frequent. It's not just like one, there are many.
I want to go to one of those one time.
And so I feel like, and that's obviously not representative of everyone in the South, but there was a lot of that in the South.
It's prevalent, yeah.
And I guess I guess growing up sometimes I was a little disappointed by some of the hypocrisy of, you know, on one hand people going, you know, I'm going to pray for you, you know, because Jesus loves you. And then in another breath, say something really offensive.
Judgmental.
Or judgmental. Or that girl's a whore. Or something
or
where you're like,
preach, and then you're fucking diddling kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The same week. Probably the same day.
Oh, I mean, I know that's blaming people and not the spirituality, but I just, what it's hard for
they
me to.
They fucked up the message. That's
I
the
just,
problem.
I just feel like that. I feel like that religion is spirituality plus politics. That it is spirituality with politics, because there is power involved and there's
money to build a building.
There's controlling people and there's, you know, like it's, I don't feel like it's all meant to be evil, but I just mean like politics are human interests. And that's why I think religion is spirituality with human interests, like with selfish human interests. And I think that's why it's easy to get corrupted, because there's power and there's money and there's control. And, you know,
it's the same thing with cops. It's anything where you're like, ideally, this works perfectly. We just need some people to enforce the law. We pay for them, so they'll be on our side. They'll arrest us without shoving our face into the ground. But then you get people.
Yeah.
And there's no liberal arts majors who become cops. So they're fucking brutes. you know? It's like, what kind of guy are you getting? So it gets fucked up. The idea
unless
of religion
Portland,
is amazing.
Unless you're in Portland.
Yeah, then yeah.
Then a lot of liberal arts people
yeah.
become cops.
Yeah, their outfits are like 9 colors.
Yeah, they have curly mustaches instead of the little push broom mustache.
Yeah, I know a bunch of like kids, like people I grew up with that were like fuck-ups, constant fuck-ups. And like, you're just like, what are they going to do with their life? And then like, eventually it's like, oh, he's a cop now. Like that's
who I want in charge of me. That fuck up.
That's what happens. It's crazy. Yeah. Like this kid's never gonna do anything, and then you know tries a bunch of different jobs, and they're all like, eh. And then he goes and like,
and oh, now I'll you're go. In charge of
I'm
all
gonna,
of us.
Yeah, I'm gonna go to night school for criminal justice, and then go to fucking get my.
Because with the cops, entry level is you're the boss of me.
Yeah. entry level is here's a loaded weapon.
Yeah.
Now here's a fast car. Here's
yeah,
that Tracy Chapman
anywhere.
Song.
There we
about
go. Good. Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Great. 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 I'm glad we went for the same joke.
But yeah, the same with religion. It's just like you gets fucked up by actual people.
Well, that's. I know it's. You have to go.
I have to run. But continue this discussion because I think it's really important for everybody at home to realize that Ari's going to hell.
Okay. Bye, Matt Myra.
Bye, Matt.
I just saw your butt crack.
That's all right.
I saw him on a commercial. You're on a commercial now, right?
No. The guy, the car guy.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, I was with Duncan. I was like, "Oh, that's my new type." Now that I'm not doing commercial anymore, goes, that's Matt Mira. You're doing Matt Ryan. That's him. And I was like, "No way, that's him. How did I not recognize him? It's not him. Fucking Duncan."
There he goes. There goes Matt Myra. Wow, what an amazing journey of a conversation this took. I did not expect for us to get into the religion talk.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like a seventh grader trying to figure it all out. I don't know.
I know that's the problem. You want to get an answer, but there's no answers there.
No.
You trust other people, and then you're like, you get old enough, and you're like, you don't know anything. You're just some guy, like Bill Burr's bit. You're just Steve. You don't have the dial up to God.
You know, my mom's gotten a lot cooler throughout the years. When I was young, she was very much like, you know, this is all literal, and this is, you know,
yeah.
And now she's like, you know what? I don't know what the answers are, but this makes me feel good, and I'm taking a chance that I'm
That's
right about
great.
It.
Yeah. That's great. I love that.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I like the way it makes me feel, so it's okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. But when you follow someone up in an elevator because wearing a yarmulke, when they say, what floor? You go, do you accept the Lord Jesus Christ as your savior? It's like, come on.
Come on.
This is not making you feel good.
Come on, dude.
Yeah.
Did that happen to you?
Yeah. My friend working at Brownstein Zeidman law firm. And we're like, what floor? And they weren't going to any floor. They just saw us with their yarmulkes and followed us.
Well, you know where they're not going? They're not going to the basement floor. That's where
right.
you're going.
That's right.
That's
I'm going to the
going.
Basement. Going down.
They're not going to the boiler room. Well, that's where you're going to be.
So did your parents mind when you stopped like being religious?
You know, my mom and I didn't really talk about it until I was in my 30s.
Oh.
And I was like, you know, I just have a hard time believing that a grand wizard constructed everything.
Yeah.
And I would get into these conversations with people when I was in high school because I played D&D. So I'm like, well, what's the difference between God and a wizard? And they're like, he's not a wizard. And I'm like, okay, but you're saying
you're
created everything.
Less than a wizard?
Sounds like a wizard, you know. So I would have the God is a wizard argument, and no one wanted to hear.
To even have that argument.
They didn't even want to have that argument that God was a wizard. And so, you know, and it bummed my mom out for a long time because I think it bummed her out in the kind of unintentionally arrogant way that, you know, like when people are like, it's just that I don't want you to burn in hell. Or like, that's what you believe. I appreciate that you are looking out for me.
Yeah.
But that's what you think. And I don't think, you know, so I don't know if, you know.
I had these Protestants praying for me in college, these two girls. And it was really nice. When it comes down to it, they were like, I found out, like, we pray for you at night. And I was like, what do you mean? They're like, that you find Jesus and go to heaven. And I was like, what if I don't find Jesus? I'm like, well, we hope you will.
Wow.
And I was like, but what if I don't? And they wouldn't answer for a while. And then finally they were like, I'm like, but if I just never find Jesus and I die, what will happen to me? And they go, you're going to go to hell.
Oh, no.
You're going to burn there forever. And I'm like, that's not fair.
That's not fair.
It's not fair. You had Protestant parents who told you all about it. I had Jewish parents who would tell me Jesus is bullshit.
Right.
So if there's a just God, you're putting me behind the eight ball. You're putting me way behind the starting mark.
Well, there's a line in the movie Contact where she's having this discussion with Matthew McConaughey, and she was like, I just don't believe it. And he goes, so you think that all these people are just wrong and everything that they believe is just wrong? And I go, don't use that just because a lot of people believe it argument. How many times throughout history can you debunk the, you know, there's no Mount Olympus? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Like, how many... And also, if you want to go by all these people, then it's like, how about look at all the people for all humanity? And a lot of them do not believe. So those people aren't wrong either. Most of them don't believe in Jesus. And here's my biggest problem. They're like, no, once Jesus, the Indians, Jesus comes, he says, I'm Jesus, you got to believe in me to go to heaven. But the Native Americans didn't find out about him for fucking hundreds of years. So they all just go to hell. They didn't have a chance.
Yeah, that's called casino gaming.
That's their benefit. They get casinos. They didn't even have a chance to go to heaven. How could they ever come to Jesus? He wasn't even around.
It's almost like you want to admit, you want to make a laundry list of things and go, okay,
I've got some gripes. Yeah, exactly. So you can be ready for it.
But then you'd be like Bart Simpson in Sunday school, like, okay, well, what if it's a robot with a human brain? Does he go to heaven?
Remember that lady they drove crazy?
Yeah.
That Sunday school lady?
Yeah.
The dog's going to, I've been over this!
Yeah, I don't know.
What were you expecting this conversation to be?
I don't know. I thought, you know, it was nice. We were talking about, I liked that it dovetailed into this. Because again, I don't know. I just know what I think, you know. And what I think is that I don't know. And I'm not, it's not the kind of I don't know that makes me go, so I'll just subscribe to a thing.
Right.
Without really knowing.
Well, I'm at two where I'm like, I used to be agnostic. I would start there. I'm like, I don't know. So, but then I realized that was just immaturity.
Right.
Being agnostic is like.
Being noncommittal.
It's like the guy in college who's like, I'm bisexual. It's like, dude, you're gay. You haven't had a woman girlfriend in 4 years. Just accept it. Go all the way.
It's fine. Just say it.
Yeah. But it's like, there's nothing else in my life I'll accept. Even an argument for it with zero proof.
Right.
There's not even a proof available. So why are we even talking about it? Get out of here. What if bears talk? But I don't know. Shut up. Get out of here. You don't know. Fine. I don't know. Stay at
home. Do you talk about any of this on stage? Did you ever talk about being in rabbinical school?
I, you know what? I tried doing it early on, and it was just – I was not talented enough to do it, to carry it across.
Do you think you could now?
Yeah, I taught in my special – paid regular, available now.
Hey, plug it.
Okay, I have a special. It's available right now. It just aired on Comedy Central a couple weeks ago, and it's you can get it on arithegreat.com. One Ari. I just stuttered. For $5. And I have a Ten Commandments bit in there about how ridiculous it is when you look at it as a grown-up, you know, on what these things mean. Well, fuck it. I'll just tell you.
Okay, good.
The first three ones is, I'm the Lord your God. Then the next sentence is, there are no other gods except for me. And then the third one is, don't take my name in vain. And after a while, it's like, hey, dude, it sounds like there's a bunch of other gods that you don't want us to know about. Why do you keep mentioning this? It's getting really obvious at some point.
Kind of a pushy older brother.
Yeah. Like, you're the only one bringing it up.
Yeah.
There's no other gods. All right. No one was saying there was. I don't know. I forgot.
It reminds me of I was in theology class, in freshman year theology class.
Yeah.
And the way it was described to me by my Jesuit priest theology teacher was, you know, it was that thing that I said earlier, like, so you have to imagine that a lot of these stories were constructed, these Old Testament stories were constructed at a time where different tribes were vying for dominance. And it was very much to the benefit of the tribal leaders. They go, if there's no other, if imagine the worst way you can threaten someone and go, okay, so now we're talking about your forever being, right? So this thing, this story, well, and then when they finally like wrote everything down, you know, years later when they wrote everything down, and they would basically hold up this book and go, hey, slobs, this book that you can't read because most of you are illiterate because most people don't, you know, like most people just didn't read.
There was no school.
There were no schools. There was no education. You know, it was – this book says you better do what it – and by it, I mean I say.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then you're going to burn forever. How do I know that? Because it says it in this book. But I can't read that book. Well, that's your fault. But I'm telling you
– we're smart enough to tell you.
Yeah. So just so you know, we're going to make sure that you are safe beyond – it was because the point was, how else could you motivate people to, you know, to give you money, to give you time, to give military service in those days unless you could threaten them with something that they couldn't – that they didn't have an answer for.
Right. Yeah. And also it's forever. So forever. You definitely want that.
Yeah.
That's why they say that they charge so much for health insurance in this country. They just bank on it's your health. There's no amount of money you can spend where it's like, I'm spending too much. It's like, it's your life.
Yeah.
Of course you'll give
them another 100.
You don't care about your kids? You'll give them another 1,000.
You have to. You wouldn't give an extra grand for your kids?
Yeah.
It's your kids. You should love them.
So they just keep banking on
that. So we're going to jack up the premium.
My friend has cancer who just came back. It's not a sob story. That's not where I'm bringing it up. But she has to get that radiation treatment. She has to, with insurance, has to pay $2,300 each session. There's four of them in a month.
Oh, my God.
So, like, why do we have insurance if you got to pay 10 grand out of pocket? That's...
So you don't have to pay 100 grand out of pocket.
I guess so. But it's like, just pay the fucking bills. Be better.
With the insurance, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well. We have, like, the 25th best insurance in the world. And we pay the most by, like, three times.
Ugh.
I don't know. I don't want to get into that.
No, I'm sorry to hear about your friend.
Yeah. Sorry, she beat it once. She's super positive. She lives in Denver. I was just hanging out with her. She's so positive. It's so interesting to see people like, hey, whatever. I'm already way ahead in life.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And then you see people
bitching
in our circles
nothing.
Like, man, nothing's going right. Like, yeah, everything's going right. You get out of fucking bed every day and you're fine.
I've only got three guest star roles this month. Nothing regular.
You don't have to spend.
Is that Pauly Shore?
No, it's not Pauly Shore.
Oh, okay.
you don't have to spend 10 grand a month on on radiation therapy. Everything is not going shitty for you.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I have a friend who is a friend of his, an ex-girlfriend of his. They're still friends. She's going through it too. And he said he was talking to her on the phone recently and she was just basically moaning from the pain from the chemo.
Yeah.
And, you know, and everyone else he encountered that day, if they started to be like, man, today was a really, he was like, no, it wasn't. You did not have a rough day. Trust me, you did not have a fucking rough day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all context.
It is. So I think in honor of people who really do have rough days, maybe try to remember that when we're like, they didn't get cell phone coverage on the internet. No, this, that. Like,
man, my life sucks.
Bad. Yeah.
You know what I like to say sometimes? My life is worse than Ethiopia.
Just put it in context. Say that?
Every time something goes wrong, I'm like, oh, I got to stop for gas. My life is worse than Ethiopia.
It's just the worst.
Clearly it's not.
Got to stop for gas.
Yeah.
My windshield's dirty. I'm already like 5 minutes late.
What? You only have the watermelon Kazoozles and not the cherry ones?
This is the worst. Yeah. This is the worst. I took like three selfies and all of them came out blurry. This is the worst.
My life sucks.
No one even understands. No one even understands.
Yeah.
So you have your special and then your show. You have a show too.
I'm so bad at I haven't had to promote a bunch of stuff like this
just
since forever.
Get it all
well,
out,
I have it every Thursday night after a popular show called At Midnight, my storyteller show. This is not happening, airs. It's just comics telling stories. I've wanted to get one Chris Hardwick on for probably 4 years.
I know, and I apologize. My schedule really sucks. I want to do your show because I know that I'll get a new bit out of it because I'll have to tell a story.
That's what Moshe and I talked about early on. He did one like early on, and it's like just forcing yourself to do it. It gets like, oh, and then he gets that stuff goes into his act.
Yeah,
I've got half my act has started with that. Anyway, I know you have stories. So that's why I wanted you on.
No, I absolutely want to do it.
You have this weird thing where I was talking about with you before, where I'm like, oh, you're going to Vancouver. Go to Whistler. Go skiing. And you're like, no time.
Yeah.
But you're winning now. You're winning it all. You have to like, you have to
live
the life a little,
right? I am taking more time to take time off here and there.
Are you?
Just because your brain can't handle never taking time off.
You're not going to go broke. You're in.
I'll be okay. But I also sort of feel like, you know, I feel like it would be a disservice to the amount of time that
the
I
hard
worked
work you put in
to get to this place if I got lazy now and didn't maintain it or try to. And also, it's fun. Like, it's still chasing stuff is
That's
fun.
True.
Like, the chase is fun. It's like once you get something is a moment that happens. You're like, oh, I have that thing now.
Yeah.
But it's the pursuit of that thing or the anticipation of that thing. And so you constantly have to be challenged to, you know, to get super excited. I just think it's a, you know.
There's also no such thing, I'm sure you realize this now, as making it. It's just you're better off and you're still trying to get better and do
exactly,
more things.
Exactly. Because
there's no line you hit.
Yeah. Because you also everything's ups and downs. And it's like, well, there's a period where you're making it, and then there will be a period again where you're not.
Not right.
And then hopefully there will be a period again where you're doing it. I mean, I've had quite a few of those. So, you know, I guess for me, I just kind of feel like, and now I also feel responsibility for other people because a lot of people work on
things. Yeah, you got an industry.
So, you know, we have 30 employees at Nerdist. At Midnight employs about 100 people.
So much responsibility.
Talking Dead employs a bunch of people. Like, if I start fucking that stuff up, then people lose their jobs.
Oh, fuck.
It's not just me.
Oh, you can't be like, I'm not working 3 weeks, you guys.
No, I can't do that.
Oh, fuck. That's so much more responsibility.
I know. There was something I was
talking. You've entered into the most clingy relationship. God. That's like the reason I can't commit to a girl. You've done it by 200.
I'm in a relationship with a couple hundred people.
Fuck.
Which is fine. Like, I'm totally, you know, that's totally fine. I don't mind that. But I mean, things are going to go away just because things go away. I don't want to be the reason that happens. Right. I mean, you know, look, all those people are talented. They would find other work, but I don't want to be the, sorry, I got lazy, or sorry, I did something dumb. Sorry, I, you know, because it's not just me.
Balls.
I know. That's why I always get worried about jury duty.
Why?
Because if I got put on a trial, like,
you won't be able to.
A ton of people wouldn't work. And I mean, I don't mind sitting in a jury room, but then I would be stressing the whole time, like, oh, everyone's supposed to be working and they're not working.
Here's your $5. Split that up with the entire.
Like, I go to the judge and be like, hey, I know work isn't usually an excuse, but if I don't work, a lot of people don't work. Can I do community service on the weekends? Can I pick
just
up trash?
Do it somehow? Yeah.
But I kind of need to work. If I don't work, these people don't work.
I got a jury duty by getting there, and they go, we need you here for a week. I'm like, oh, no. Oh, I'm booked on the weekend. I heard it was like 2 days. And they're like, well, you got to come back. I'm like, yeah, I'll come back, but I cannot do it this week. Like, I'll be out of work. And then this guy next to me made up this excuse. He goes, Your Honor, I have this problem. My legs, if I sit down too long, my legs get really, really itchy. I've got scheduled a doctor appointment, so I don't know what it is yet, but in fact it's happening now already, and then I have to stand up, otherwise it becomes unbearable. And the judge, she was like, okay, just stand on the jury duty. Problem solved. And you got to stand anyway.
Well, but if I stand, then
his shoulders just slumped, and he's like, fuck,
the itchy leg thing was supposed to be ironclad.
Yeah. So I got my storyteller show. This is not happening. 12:30.
Great.
Also, individual clips are on YouTube, which you should see.
Ari Shaffir.
Long form. And I have a podcast called Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank.
Excellent.
And I just talk about one subject. It's fun and interesting.
From Yeshiva to Skeptic Tank.
Yeah.
That's an amazing journey.
Yeah.
But congratulations on, you know.
Dude, you know what I'm glad about? When we're doing open mics, we're still fucking in the business, man.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Still working.
That's really crazy. Like, to be able to say things like, well, 15 years ago, not, and have it actually mean.
I should definitely be out. Just by the odds against, I mean, I don't want to lump you in with me, but it's like most of us should be out.
You know, January is the anniversary. That's the anniversary month when I started working. I started working for MTV January of 1994. Mm. And when I start putting it in crazy terms, I go, that means a baby that was born the day that I started working at MTV can now legally go buy a drink. And that math, like, twists my brain.
Wow. Yeah.
That's so weird.
I can legally buy a drink.
This was I feel like this was the stoniest conversation without either of us actually
eating. I did not get high all day today. In fact, I looked before I left. I was like, maybe I'll get a little high, be okay. I was like, eh. And I just didn't have time for it.
You don't need it to be trippy, man.
It's an all the time.
So, AriTheGreat.com, Ari Shaffir.
Ari Shaffir on Twitter and Instagram. But yeah. I'm a little off that shit now because I got a flip phone. But that's another conversation.
Oh, that would have been a good conversation.
Yeah. Too late to do it.
God damn it.
They got off the train a little bit.
Next time.
Next time on Nerdist.
All right, Shaffir. Enjoy your burrito. Enjoy your burrito.
Enjoy your burrito.
Whatever burrito, whatever spiritual or non-spiritual, whatever
quotes.
Religious or non-denominational burrito.
Enjoy your kosher burrito.
Kosher
burrito without meat. Whatever.
No meat on Friday. enjoy not having your burrito during Lent if you have to give it up.
Whatever the burrito.
Enjoy whatever. Burrito. Or say, fuck it, it's a burrito. I don't believe in anything except believe in the burrito.
Does this burrito exist? Either way, enjoy it.
How do I know the burrito that I'm seeing is the same burrito you're seeing. Is this burrito benevolent? Is this burrito evil? Is it a vengeful burrito? Or will it accept? Or at the end of my life, can I just say I'm sorry? And
will this burrito come back? Will I shit out this burrito and come back as a new burrito?
If you eat a burrito on Friday, will it come back to you on Sunday? Quite possibly. Yeah. Did Ari's people make the burrito go away on a Friday? Did it come back on us? No?
No, I don't know. I think we lost it.
Oh, I did. All right.
Maybe 4 or 5 ago.
Whatever you have, enjoy your burrito.
That's my favorite thing to come out of this podcast. Enjoy your burrito.
Really?
I love it. When I was going through my darkest depressions, that helped me.
I'm honored to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're feeling better.
Thanks.
Let's go enjoy a burrito.
Yeah.
All right.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Gen Z high school girls have gone through a lot. So what could and did send a shockwave through a group of 50 of them competing in one of the nation's biggest scholarship competitions? I'm your host, Shimo Liai, and I'm going to take you behind the scenes of the Distinguished Young Women Competition. I was Nevada's competitor 20 years ago, but this time, a Supreme Court decision catapults all 50 girls into the center of a nationwide debate about their rights. These girls, who have spent months fighting to make it to nationals, are faced with a tough decision. Do they speak up for their political beliefs, or do they stay focused on winning the money?
I think it's going to get ugly.
Follow the competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of the competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.